Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd. Dave, it's Season 2, Episode 125. Not many episodes left in Season 2, and this one is a special Friday the 13th episode.
Yeah, what a freaky day, huh? Rashard Mendenhall returned to Twitter today, David. 1 year to the date, exactly, of his last tweet, and he returned first with a tweet to say hello to everybody with a smiley face. His second tweet says, "My knee has healed wonderfully. Thanks for all the well wishes." So, let's start off with that. I think he used a poor choice of words there. It's amazing how many mistakes you can make on Twitter in 140 characters. I am famous for that. The word healed and healing, healing would probably be the better choice of words, because this is a guy that's just 6 months now removed from his ACL surgery. In a post earlier this week, I talked about Dr. Neil, I think it's Ghidorah, who was on the NFL Network, who had some really good insight into the injuries. Nothing earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination, but says he thinks that a running back needs 8 months at the minimum to get through an ACL injury. More specifically, he said that studies have shown that NFL running backs usually get back to playing at about 10 to 10 and a half months after the injury, and he notes the psychological aspect as being one of the toughest barriers for a running back, in the trust in their knee and all like that. So even though this is going to make its rounds through the media and on Twitter today, same prognosis on, from me at least, on him going to start the training camp on PUP, going to start regular season on PUP. And I would call him a freak if he's back to the 53-man roster prior to Week 10. But, freak and Friday the 13th, that goes along pretty good together.
All right, prior to Week 10 sounds like a bit of a stretch. I mean, what would the date be on Week 10?
I don't have that in front of me, but you're talking, 10 and a half months puts him at 12. Week 12 to week 13. So there you go. So, I mean, you're talking at about, 8 months returning, 8 and a half, 9 months would put him probably around the week 10 spot.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've agreed to disagree on this the whole way through. So,
he's not going to start the regular season on the 53-man roster. You'll give me that now, right?
I'll give you that. Yeah, I just think, a lot of people have said, and we've heard people say, Rashard Mendenhall is never going to touch the ball as a Steeler again, blah, 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 blah. And they might be right. Look, there's no guarantees that I'm right either. I just think that I'm expecting Rashard Mendenhall to have a reasonable contribution. I think we had a bet on whether he'd have 100 carries this year, and I said yes, and you said no, and we'll see what happens. So I'm glad to hear he thinks his knee's healing well.
Same goes with Aiden, because the whole story with the doctor on NFL Network was the story revolved around, of course, Adrian Peterson. I would be shocked, any fantasy football players out there, if you're drafting Adrian Peterson anywhere before round 10 of a fantasy draft this year, you're asking for trouble, in my opinion. No way does he start the regular season as a starting running back for the Minnesota Vikings.
He got hurt around the same time, maybe a little bit earlier. We've seen video of him working out. The thing is, these guys are the freaks. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out for any of them, but, professional athletes who are age, 25 years old, if there's anybody who's going to do it, they're going to be the ones who do it. So, I'm not sure it's worth arguing about. I do think it's interesting, and I do think it's interesting that these guys are optimistic. But as I've always said, the last person to ask about an injury is the athlete himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Ready, go. Yeah, so Dave, you know, we'll see what happens with Mendenhall. And, you know, we'll see when he gets to camp, which is now we're only 12 days away from the Steelers reporting. So that'll be – we'll get an update then, and we've got a lot of questions to ask. And I'm happy to report after meeting with guys today, looks like I'm going to be on the air 7 to 9 or 6 to 8 a lot of the nights during the time that Steelers are in La Trobe. So we'll have – you know, hopefully we'll have some good insights, and we'll have a lot to talk about.
Fantastic. And on the back end of this show today, we have Steelers wide receiver Tyler Beiler out of Bridgewater there. A lot of people probably have heard the name a little bit this offseason, was signed to a futures contract this offseason, went undrafted. In the 2011 draft, caught on with the San Francisco 49ers as an undrafted free agent, of course, did not make their roster, and spent like the opening month or so of the season on the Jacksonville Jaguars practice squad. So got about 12 minutes in with him talking, you know, various things about the offense, and, you know, I'll just tease it at that.
Okay, sounds good. I was unable to sit in on that, so I'm sure it's great stuff as always. David, a piece of news that we haven't talked a lot about. I don't think there's a lot to talk about. I don't think it's going to be significant, but we are 13 days away from camp, 12 days away from reporting, and David DeCastro is unsigned. Anything to read into that, or it's just guys got a slot around them?
It's just really the holdup is Brandon Whedon in Cleveland. And I've got to be honest with you, I'm surprised that it has taken this long, especially after the Patriots, you know, they had signed Chandler Jones back in May, and he was the first one that really had the line drawn in the sand as far as the full 4 years guaranteed of the contract. He got, I think, $4.384 million was a signing bonus. $7.42 million of the $8.173 million was guaranteed. And I thought then that, okay, well, there's the line in the sand. The rest of this slotting should go well. And it's not, you know, there's no question about what the amount's going to be with Whedon, with Reef and for Detroit or for DeCastro. What Andrew Brandt had pointed out a few weeks ago was, you know, there could be some things with the offset language, but I think the more research that I do, I think that's more on the top, the top eight guys right now in round one that remain unsigned. I think that applies more to them than it does the guys on the bottom in there. With Whedon, the big holdup with Whedon's contract, you know, I think with his age, his agent is trying to erase that line in the sand that the Patriots, you know, drew, and he's going for 4 full years guaranteed, and at the minimum, he's going to want something similar to what the Browns gave defensive tackle Phil Taylor at the number 120 at the 21st overall pick last year, which was, you know, a combination of guarantee roster bonus in that fourth year. So that's the holdup. Whedon kind of acts like, you know, he hopes it's done, you know, all the obvious political correct answers that could go along with the contract situation. But, you know, he's working, but he says it takes two sides, though. But I would not expect Riley Reiff, who was the pick after Whedon, or David DeCastro to sign until a deal with Whedon gets done, because let's face it, these agents do not want to leave anything on the table when it comes to any portion of a fourth-year guarantee. So if you want to blame it on anything right now, it would be Brandon Whedon. And remember, the Steelers have not had – they've had a successful run at first-round picks being signed and in camp on time. The last was Ben Roethlisberger in 2004, who signed 4 days after workouts began. Marquise Pouncey cut it real, real close back in 2010 when he didn't arrive to camp in time for the traditionally the first day, you know, opening run test, but he didn't miss any practices as a result. So it's not panic mode right now, David, but, you know, that calendar, we're turning those days off pretty quickly, and the longer that DeCastro remains unsigned could signal that, you know, he might be a few days late.
Right, and we've talked about that. The one thing is he didn't miss any time in the mini camp when he was able to report after graduation. So generally, you know, this doesn't look like a big deal. But as you said, some of the dominoes have to fall. I got to believe he's going to be in there. We both agree that Mike Wallace probably won't be in there on day one, but everybody else looks good. So going into camp, you know, the Steelers are look relatively healthy compared to where you would want them to be. I think we knew about the injuries last year that happened at the end of the season. Kiesel seems to be fully recovered. Casey and Rashard that we talked about are going to be slower going, but you know, everybody else seems to be coming in with the reasonably healthy. We've talked about Harrison and Worlds and the nicks and bumps and bruises they've had, but most of the time that they seem to miss in the OTAs and mini camps seem to be more precautionary than serious. Although with Worlds' wrist, we've had less information on that. So generally all good news on the health front for the Steelers so far this year. Nobody lost in the offseason like we've had in years past with Willie Colon and some of the other guys. So, Dave, the thing that came out that you put something up about that a little interesting, maybe not at all surprising, is Antonio Brown mentioned that, you know, he wouldn't mind continuing to return punts. And the Steelers are in a nice situation here, and this is a situation that hasn't been the case. More often than not, it hasn't been the case. Let's put it that way. Santonio Holmes was the guy they drafted, and they found out that he was a pretty good punt returner, but he was a starting receiver, and they didn't really want to use him. They've never really had a guy who is a really good return guy who was also not a valuable part of the offense. And they're talking about Manny Sanders doing it this year, and he could still be a valuable part of the offense. But Chris Rainey's a guy both you and I like, and he might end up having a role in that as well. But the point being that maybe they have three guys on the roster who can actually do this reasonably well.
Absolutely. And as I pointed out in my post, unless Sanders, and there's the injury. I mean, let's face it, durability is going to be an issue heading into this season with Sanders. So, you give him the first crack at it. And unless he performs horribly in the preseason, I think it's his job to lose. You have Chris Rainey, as you said, as a definite possibility there. Although Rainey also has the ability in the punt blocking, portions of the game after blocking six punts during his career at Florida. Marquise Mays, who a guy who's really on the outside looking in at the 53-man roster, really the only way he could make the 53-man roster, in my opinion, would be as a specialist. And then you have Antonio Brown to fall back on. Maybe you need a certain point of the game where you need kind of a spark situation, or maybe Sanders just kind of having a bad game or whatnot. I'm not willing to say that Brown's not going to return any punts this year, but I think because of his ability and what he provides on the offense, and the role that he's going to have this year, I think you need to limit the wear and tear on him, and I think that's what the Steelers' plans are to do with him this year. So I like the fact that, hey, the guy the more you can do, the more you can do. But I think in this situation, I respect his want, but I think it's best that he focuses, as much as he can on a receiver position this year.
Yeah, and, it'll be also an interesting day to see what happens with kick returns if it's Sanders or somebody else.
The same instance there too. Maybe Rainey's a possibility there, but I think it's going to be Sanders' job to lose. He didn't have a lot of work before, going down injured and all like that. I think he had, 7 punts for 82 yards and 24 kickoffs for 721 yards during his first 2 years in the season for Sanders there. So we'll just have to watch this in preseason to see how it develops. But as you said, Antonio Brown is a great option to have there. And the more players you have like that, the better you are on the roster.
Yep, no question. Dave, a little bit of interesting news yesterday. We talked about it when you were on the Joe Bendel show with me. There was a supplemental draft in the NFL, and we've seen this every once in a while. There were more guys involved this year, but again, there was really only one guy who looked like he might get drafted, and ended up happening that way. A guy named Josh Gordon, a wide receiver from Baylor who hasn't played since 2010. He's had some off-field issues. He's had some injury issues. But in his pro day workout Tuesday down in Houston, he looked very good catching the ball. Might have strained his quad a little bit at the end of that, but he ran a 4.5 240. He's a big receiver. And there was some buzz around him, and the buzz was always associated with the Cleveland Browns. And I would think most people that we saw had him as a 3-4 round grade, maybe a couple had him maybe even a little higher than that. There was some buzz associated with the Dallas Cowboys. But I guess we got a clear signal about what the Browns think of the receiving core, because they jumped up and took him in the second round, and he was the only player taken.
And, David, you kind of back after the draft, you were all over the Browns with their draft with good reason, because it looked like a panic type draft that they had there. You know, when the other kid, Kendall Wright, the other receiver from Baylor, it looked like the Browns, you know, even after trading up in the first round to get Trent Richardson, it looked like they had Kendall Wright's jersey already printed up there and ready to go, and were a bit shell-shocked, in my opinion, and yours too, that he was not on the board there in their other pick in the first round. And thus they go and trade in and get Whedon there. And it just does not seem, you know, this selection of Josh Gordon in the second round, to me, kind of piles on to the panic mode that they have, because let's face it, their wide receiver bunch right now, prior to yesterday, Greg Little, Muhammad Masakoi, Joshua Cribbs, they did draft Travis Benjamin in the fourth round there, Carlton Mitchell and Jordan Norwood. A lot of these people can't even tell, you know, outside of Little and Cribbs and maybe Masakoi, there's not much substance there. Little, we've talked about before with the drops and all like that. Adding Josh Gordon in the second round of a supplemental draft with just one season under his belt, so to speak, at Baylor, which boiled down, as I said on your show on ESPN yesterday, basically boils down to two real good games against Kansas and Kansas State. This to me just smells of panic in this situation. Now, Josh Gordon very well could become a great receiver, but you know, to me, very, very risky move to sacrifice your 2013 second round pick to draft a guy like this with the character issues and you know, only 1 year experience under his belt.
Well, you know, the upside for them is they get him a year earlier. So they get a guy, you know, essentially they get a guy earlier. There's some value in that. We'll see how it works out. But they obviously didn't think a lot of the receivers. They do like Little, and Gordon's supposed to be a very good blocker too. So Tony Richardson's going to like that he has two good blocking receivers if the scouting reports are accurate. So we will see what happens. And if Josh Cribbs now gets to play a more dynamic role, that's going to help him. It makes the Browns a better team, no question. Is it going to make them a good team? No. But it adds something to them, but at the cost of a second-round pick last year. So, you know, maybe the guy's a third- or fourth-round pick, and how much value is there in having him a year earlier? So probably some value, because he gets that year of experience under his belt. So, you know, you could probably equate it with giving up a third next year, since you get that year now. But we'll see how it plays out. They were always linked to him, and it, you know, it doesn't always turn out that the pundits and the media guys get this right. But they sniffed this out pretty clearly, and the Browns went up and made a real move.
And the thing with this, though, you know, he's missed all the OTAs and all the mini camps, so he's going into training camp. He is way, way, way behind the eight ball, and it's going to be hard to get a guy like
but no further behind than any of the guys last year. So,
well, that's true, but, you know, it's hard to stop what you're doing to kind of catch someone up in the class. As far as this goes, in my opinion, which means that the start of this coming season, you're not going to be seeing him a lot, in my opinion. You know, now by the time you get to the later part of the season, especially when the Steelers play the Browns, yeah, he could be, you know, factored into the offense somewhat. But you know, let me just end by saying this: I bet Mike Holmgren's not a very good poker player.
Yeah, when you don't necessarily want that news getting out, but when it's one guy and it's I think they probably stepped up probably around more than they wanted to, but that's probably better than seeing him taking 10 picks ahead of you and hating the fact that you didn't get him. So they did what they wanted to do, so I give them credit for that. Their draft looks better as a result, and now we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath on it. You look back at some of these supplemental draft players, but I don't know. You know my thoughts on it, and he's definitely going to be a guy that everybody's going to have their eye on this year, that's for sure.
So, Dave, a little bit of breaking news just now. Drew Brees, and I just tweeted about it. I've said all along, there is so much ado about nothing, so much written about this Drew Brees situation. He signed 5 years, $100 million, $60 million guaranteed. You know, I don't know that there's anything to say about it other than good for all involved, and you know, the media, you know, can not write about it now.
Yeah, I mean, they had to get this done, right? I mean, there's no two ways around it, especially after all the Bounty Gate stuff. And look, Breeze is one. I've met the guy, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet in the world. A great quarterback. This deal had to be done. I think he handled himself splendidly throughout this whole process here, and now he gets the reward that he so deserves.
You think he's set for life at $60 million guaranteed with $22 million more in rolling guarantees?
I think he'll be able to, buy a couple sodas there, along the way.
Yeah, right. So, good for him. Again, no surprise. And that's the news everybody was waiting for. He said it was a Monday deadline, and I don't know if it was kind of gun to the head to the Saints, but he really wanted to get this done. He's been very vocal, very public about it, which is absolutely his right. But now it's done, and we can move on from that story.
Absolutely. And, you got the Forte situation to watch still, the Ray Rice situation with that deadline approaching there.
Okay. Any other big news that we need to be hitting on here?
Not earth-shattering. Larry Foote come out yesterday, claims he was defrauded out of $400,000. Kind of was duped into investing money with the two defendants that he's suing back in in Dearborn Heights in Michigan, investing into a valet service that these guys apparently told him they had acquired major valet parking contracts and needed an investor to provide capital. So poor decisions it looks like there, and we'll see how this plays out. But Larry Foote definitely appears to need a job this year.
A little bit of shades of Charlie Batch.
Yeah, I can't remember all the specifics on him, but
Batch lost. He basically lost everything and filed for bankruptcy last year. Listed all his assets, and all gone. This doesn't seem to be as extreme, but yeah, I'm sure that $3 million this year will help.
absolutely.
Okay, well, Dave, I'll let you give the details, and we'll close it up and get your interview with Tyler Beiler.
Yeah, and as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter. Help him out at Hammer Speaks. He also his Pirates account, DT on Pirates. He's been filling in splendidly on the Joe Bindle show. Going to be on again today. As he mentioned at the top of the show, he's going to be found out that he's going to be, the night coverage, I guess, during the training camp on 970 as well, too. So make sure you're following David and supporting him in his efforts as well. Let's see, email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. We appreciate all the donations coming in. You can find that link to donate if you so desire on SteelersDepot.com. So without further ado, here's my interview with Tyler Beiler, signed futures contract this offseason, wide receiver for the Steelers. Enjoy it and have a great weekend. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. The Steelers are 2 weeks away, of course, from reporting to training camp in Latrobe this year. And today I'm joined by Steelers wide receiver Tyler Beiler out of Bridgewater Division III school in Virginia. Tyler went undrafted in the 2011 draft. He signed on to the San Francisco 49ers as an undrafted free agent last year, spent most of training camp with them, was released, and then caught on with the Jacksonville Jaguars for a month in training camp. So welcome to the show, Tyler. Thank you for taking time on this Friday for joining us on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, Dave, I'm glad to be on here.
Let's start off, Tyler. Pretty exciting time for you, but it's not your first training camp because you were with the 49ers last year. You were one of those guys last year, though, that kind of had the double whammy against them. You were coming out of a Division III school at Bridgewater in Virginia, and then, of course, the lockout was going on. That had to be pretty frustrating for you, didn't it?
It was and it wasn't. I kind of just took the approach that I'm going to control the things I can control and just, still prepared like I would for any other time. But, it definitely made it tougher on me, having no off-season program and then just getting thrown right into training camp.
Now, There was talk that the Steelers even had, last year, I think around March or so, there was talk that they were going to bring you in for a pre-draft visit. Did you visit Pittsburgh, or did they work you out prior to the draft last year?
I had a workout, a private workout at my school, but never came on a visit.
Oh, okay. I know they've had interest. That's why I recognized your name this past off season when they signed you to the futures deal there. So, there was definitely some interest in there. So that's good. You spent time with the 49ers. I think you only got to participate in one game, if I'm not mistaken, with the 49ers prior to your release there, and then you caught on with the Jaguars on their practice squad. What were you able to learn during the time in camp last year with the 49ers and subsequently with your time with the Jaguars?
It was really just about finding out what the next level is all about, the difference in the speed, just the difference in the techniques and the game from when I was in college. So it was nice to, have that experience and build on that.
Were they good at kind of letting you know what you kind of needed to work on there, prior, I guess, to your releases? From both clubs, did you have a pretty good idea of knowing, what you need, what parts of your game you needed to improve on?
That's something that I, work on and try to figure out every day that I'm on the job. But as far as, being released from both camps, I remember Harbaugh said, we can see that your body is ready, your athleticism is there. It's it just comes down to, it wasn't really happening just because of the limited amount of time that I had with the team. So I looked at that as a good thing because he basically said that the athleticism is there, just keep working and you'll catch on with somebody.
When you look at your stats at Bridgewater, you really blew it out of the water. Kind of looking at here let's see, 30 games played, 145 receptions, 2,945 yards and 30 touchdowns to go along with it. And then you look at your pro day numbers, I think that was at James Madison, 4.38 to a 4.4 40 time. Your vertical jump, they must have had problems keeping you from jumping out of the building there, 40.5. Inch vertical there, a broad jump of 10'4", a nice shuttle time of 4.17, and you showed you had some strength too by doing 18 reps on the bench there. So that definitely had put your name out there, at least on the workout sheets.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Do you think that you have had time already in an NFL training camp with the 49ers, do you think that gives you a little bit of an advantage this year with the Steelers, especially against some of the younger undrafted guys from this year?
Absolutely, yeah. Just being there, knowing what to expect somewhat. I mean, every training camp's going to be different, but just the experience of being there and, it won't be my first time will be a good thing.
I guess a guy with your speed and right at about 6 inches, I kind of have you pegged as playing the X receiver role. Is that where the Steelers have had you lining up, or have you been playing both the X or Z?
I spent spring training at the Z and a little bit at the F.
Okay, interesting. I guess the hardest thing with a guy that's as fast as you are, you're probably right there, with Mike Wallace and the Chris Raineys as far as speed goes. I would guess that probably the toughest thing for a receiver with speed would being able to stay under control in your routes and learning to run more of, I guess, at a three quarters like they talk about. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, no matter how fast you are, you always want to, have complete body control throughout your whole route and, you know, anything you're doing. So, I mean, that's something that I've always worked on since I was, you know, in high school. So, I mean, it's really nothing new.
Did you also return both punts and kicks while at Bridgewater? Is that something that you're going to get a look here and there at, you think, with the Steelers? Or have you gotten a look here and there thus far in the off-season program?
I've returned a few here in the off-season and really just hoping that I'll get the opportunity in the preseason as well.
You think you're going to play much on special teams? Do you have much special teams experience outside of returning the kicks?
Not as much in college, but, you know, I like to think of myself as a versatile guy. And, you know, anywhere that they see that I can help, then I'm definitely willing and able to do that.
Todd Haley, of course, his first year as a new offensive coordinator for the Steelers. A lot of Steeler Nation, you know, kind of wondering. There was all the talk about Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger, but I think that was overblown as far as their relationship goes. Starting off, I think that, you know, from all reports, I think they're getting along fine. Is he really as fiery as of an offensive coordinator as people say, or you know, what kind of person, I guess, is Todd Haley that you've come to know over the last off season here?
Yeah, I definitely saw him get fired up a few times, but you know, that just comes from somebody who, you know, knows what he wants and wants it done perfectly. So, you know, in that sense, that's definitely something I respect about him and something that, you know, I appreciate about him.
Have you had any problems at all picking up the offense, the terminology and all like that? Has been pretty straightforward and easy for you to understand?
I'll tell you what, man, these past 2 months when I was in Pittsburgh was two of the best months I've had in my career, just being able to really spend some time with the playbook and, you know, get it down. That's not something I had the opportunity to do in San Fran. So, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty simple, you know, with the concepts and the wording and whatnot. So, it's been good. I've been able to definitely spend some good time with the playbook.
Yeah, we've heard your name a few times in a few of the media reports and, you know, during this offseason. So, you know, it definitely seems that you and Tony Clemens and, you know, maybe Marquise Mays are kind of guys that are going to be battling, you know, for possibly a fifth or sixth wide receiver spot on the roster there. Of course, you're working with, you know, a veteran. Hines Ward's gone now this past offseason, but Jericho Cotchery's a veteran. What kind of guy, you know, he's known as a great team guy, a great teacher and all. Talk about a little bit about what you've learned from Jericho thus far.
Jericho is an awesome guy, man. He's very eager to help even the young guys. You know, I just basically try to learn as much as I can from him, take everything between me and him and everything that he tells me in, and you know, that's a great guy to learn from.
Scotty Montgomery, of course, is your position coach, and he's another guy. You know, Steeler fans don't get to hear too much from the assistant coaches. Don't get to hear too much interviews or FaceTime done with them. Mostly it's with Mike Tomlin. But Scotty Montgomery comes off as a real players-type coach, real down-to-earth. You know, he's had to been a joy to work with this offseason.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, a great joy. I mean, one thing you really respect a lot as a player and appreciate as a player is just the coach who's going to, you know, tell you how it is. And Coach Montgomery is definitely one of those guys.
As you head off into training camp here, well, first of all, you were from Lancaster, I think. Did you grow up a Steelers fan, or were you an Eagles fan?
Well, I'm actually, I have a lot of family from down in Virginia, so I grew up a Redskins fan.
Oh, okay, and then the Steelers, of course, will get to play them this year as well, too, I believe in the preseason there. or in the regular season, I should say. So, you know, hopefully you'll be able to participate in that game as well, too, by making the roster and all. What have you seen, you know, since you're signing with the Steelers and all like that? Of course, Steeler Nation is wide and vast and pretty rabid fan base. Have you gotten to experience a little bit of that thus far?
Oh, absolutely. Steelers Nation is definitely one of the most loyal, fan base that, you know, I've ever seen. You know, it just, as a player, it really excites you.
And that's Tyler Beiler, and you can follow Tyler on Twitter, at Tyler Beiler, all one word. And, Tyler, we appreciate you taking time out, on the Friday here before training camp gets started. I know it's an exciting time for you. We wish you all the luck in the world of making the roster this year, and thanks for joining us once again.
I appreciate it a lot, Dave. Thanks for having me on, and, I'm looking forward to showing y'all what I'm all about.
And that's Tyler Beiler joining us today on the Terrible Podcast, and we appreciate his time.